Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below. You're going to listen to a conversation about the role of a trader in the organic fruit and vegetable business in Europe, or as Aosta likes to call themselves, a conductor of an orchestra. We dive deeper into the connection between health and organic produce, and how to monetize sustainability, plus changing your profit and loss statements to reflect this sustainability, and we discuss the biggest threat to sustainability, anonymity. The sound quality of this interview is not always perfect, as we recorded this live at the headquarters of Aosta. Welcome to another episode of Investing in Regenerative Agriculture, Investing as if the Planet Mattered, a podcast show where I talk to the pioneers in the regenerative food and agriculture space to learn more on how to put our money to work to regenerate soil, people, local communities and ecosystems while making an appropriate and fair return. Why am I focused on soil and regeneration? Because so many of the pressing issues we face today have their roots in how we treat our land, grow our food, and what we eat. And it's time that we, as investors, big and small, and consumers, start paying much more attention to the dirt/soil underneath our feet. Before we get started, I've been recording these interviews next to my day job, and I will definitely continue to do so and release about an episode a month. But at the same time, I would love to take this further, share more interviews. There are many more stories to share on investing in regenerative food and agriculture. More depth, improve the quality, maybe even doing some video series. So I started a Patreon community, which makes it easy to support creators like myself. If these podcasts have been of value to you, and if you have the means, I invite you to support me and make this happen. For more information, please find the link to my Patreon account in the description below. And now, without further ado, the interview. Enjoy! Welcome to Investing in Regenerative Agriculture, Investing as if the Planet Mattered. I'm here with Volkert Engelsman, co-founder of Aosta, international distributor of fresh, organic and fair fruits and vegetables. They take responsibility and transparency to a whole new level and maintain a close working relationship with more than 1,000 growers in 6 continents. Volkert is very proud to say that none of their suppliers ever went back to chemical, non-organic agriculture. Welcome, Volkert.
Thank you, Koen.
So to start with a personal question, as I usually like to start, how did you end up founding, co-founding Aosta in the food, agriculture, and of course the organic part of that?
Well, the slogan of this company is where ecology meets economy. So my roots are also in both worlds. I think ecology for us also stands for a new society, new agriculture. Economy stands for pragmatism. And I learned thinking about the world and its future at a Steiner school in Germany. Then I decided to study economics and business administration and ended up with Cargill, a big commodity trading company in the US. And at some point, after a few years, steep learning curves, I ran into a few growers who said, we would love to go sustainable and organic, but there doesn't seem to be a market. So I thought, all right, there should be a market for organic. And if there is none, then we'll create one. And that was 25 years ago, hence Aosta.
And now we've been 25 years later, you have 100 people working here. We're in the headquarters, building a new headquarters, which will be done in 6 months. 100 million revenue, 1,000 suppliers. What's the main lesson you see? What's the main story you want to bring forward if you look back at the 25 years?
The main lesson I would say is the biggest threat to sustainability is anonymity. Because usually exploitation rides on the back of anonymity. If I don't know you, I can exploit you. If I don't know the impact on people and planet, I can exploit people and planet. So I thought we can endlessly talk about health and better climate and better environment and social responsibility. But if we are not transparent about it, this will be theory and cloud nine talk. That's why, that's what I really learned from Cargill. a company that trades in anonymous commodities. And food is literally commodified. It means anonymized. So I thought there is no such thing as sustainability without transparency. That's why we created this company. And the first thing we did was not talk about people and planet, but talk about the true and the real story behind the product. So that's what our Nature & More brand does. It reveals the true story of each grower by putting a little stamp on each fruit with a QR code and the face of the grower. So the consumer is empowered to make an informed purchase decision because he can visit that grower and enter into a dialogue and on the social media and talk about the grower's views on, for instance, soil health or biodiversity or mitigating climate change or what he does to empower his black workforce or his migrant workforce or his workforce in general, what he does to contribute to a fairer distribution of wealth throughout the supply chain. And by being transparent about this, we also enable the grower to capitalize on his contribution to people and planet.
But you take it a few steps further than most companies or some companies that have copied you now and showing the face of one of their suppliers and maybe a bit of the story. You're measuring this biodiversity, you're measuring this soil health, you're really taking this transparency, plus you're showing and sharing with your suppliers margins, and you're really making it to not even a supplier but a partner. It's not a linear relationship, they are in the same boat, as we say.
Absolutely.
What's the thought behind it? Like, how far are you going to push this, and how far are you pushing that? What are the examples there that really stand out for you?
Well, Koen, I think you can't push this far enough. Trade, in our case, is not about trade or buying low and selling high. Trade, in our case, is about responsibly running a supply chain. So we rather consider ourselves a air traffic controller rather than a trader. So we enter
or a maestro of an orchestra.
Better. Much nicer, actually. So we consider ourselves friends and partners and families with all the suppliers and customers and other stakeholders that form this supply chain together. In our journey to achieve more sustainability, more healthy food, a lower impact of food and farming on, for instance, soil or biodiversity or climate, in order to achieve a positive impact on social, you need to not only monitor sustainability and incremental steps of development, but you also need to empower growers to manage sustainability, which is precisely what we do. We go there, we team up with these growers, we send in the troops, we send in the agronomists, and help them to embark on a journey that's called sustainability. So that will be two M's, monitoring and managing. But where is the third and the fourth M? The third would be marketing. Because if we would anonymize his product again, then we would talk cleverly about sustainability. But in the end, we wouldn't change the business model. And we would join this race to the bottom, price-wise, at the expense of people and planet. Which is what we don't like. Which we think is where the perverse incentive is in this economy. We talk about people, planet, and profit, but I think that's outdated. I think it's purely and exclusively about profit.
And yet you are selling to major supermarket chains all around Europe. How has been that their response to, we're being open about things, we're non-anonymizing our suppliers, we're bringing them into this discussion, we're taking them onto a journey, and we're not going down the rabbit hole of looking for the lowest possible margin. What's the response of the traditional place where most people at the end get their fruits and vegetables?
Overwhelmingly positive. Why? Because if we reach out to the consumer, which we try to do as much as we can, we notice that consumers are not only concerned as a citizen about their health and the people and planet's health, but they also would love to take responsibility as a consumer. We empower them to make an informed purchase decision by talking about health and the impact on people and planet. So that's why I'm saying it is purely about profit, not about people and planet. Because if you say people and planet and profit, then usually it ends up with people and planet are important, but profit is the most important. I think if you only would talk only and exclusively about profit, but you would factor in the costs of people and planet, then you would change your profit definition, which is what we need.
And what you did.
It's also what we did. So marketing sustainability automatically leads to monetizing sustainability, which would be the fourth M. We have measured the impact, we've managed it, we've marketed it. But if we really want to address the perverse incentives of a wrong profit definition at the expense of people and planet, then you have to monetize this impact as well, which is what we did. So we reduced the KPIs to those 20% performance indicators with regards to sustainability that define 80% of the impact, which is a very pragmatic approach. And we teamed up with various United Nations agencies such as FAO, WHO, UNEP, UNDP, with various financial auditors. And we concluded that organic is not too expensive, but conventional too cheap, as long as that farming system keeps externalizing costs of people and planet. And we achieved enormous backup for that. And I believe that in the next few years, sustainability will no longer be in the exclusive domain of a few green activists. It will increasingly also be in the domain of the financial sector. We see new banking, venture capital, and investment projects popping up everywhere, including in the institutional investor sector, whereby people say, can we revisit the so-called RAROCs, the risk-adjusted returns on capital, for instance, and factor in a stress test with regards to climate change or soil erosion or biodiversity or ecosystems? Because if we look at our present investments and we do not factor in the costs of climate change or biodiversity loss or child labor or whatever, then that means a potential risk for the future ability to make a profit.
To exist in many cases of companies.
And to exist. So if we jump ahead, let's say in 5 to 10 years, it will be very difficult for food and farming operators to attract capital if they do not invest in people and planet. At least I hope so. And simultaneously, it will be very silly for bankers or credit suppliers or venture capital people to invest in something of which it is not clear what the impact is on people and planet, because it is
like negative, yeah.
It's like flying in the dark without instruments or navigation,
which we did for a while, and then luckily we invented some other things.
Yeah,
and we were flying. Yeah. So what would be your advice if you are an impact investor, which are hopefully all listening to this show? You're interested, you're really passionate about food and agriculture, you've done your research, read your books. Where can you go? What would be the first step to put money to work in this enormously diverse and complex sector that is food and agriculture?
Well, I would say, first of all, it's not enormously complex. It's actually quite simple. If we want to feed the world and future, then we have to look after the resources that enable us to feed the world. And one of the first resources would be soil fertility, which we are killing and losing at a rate of 30 soccer fields per minute, accumulating to 12 million hectares a year, according to the FAO. So first of all, let's look after our soils. And farmers who do not invest in soils, farmers who use mineral fertilizer and other crap to boost productivity at the expense of soil fertility, they do not deserve to get capital because they are undermining and
they're mining our soils.
They're depleting their soils, so they're undermining their ability to be profitable in future. So it would be very silly for an investor to invest in such an idiot. So secondly,
invest in the ones that are building it.
Yeah, so invest in those who are building soils, who are contributing to the water holding capacity of soils, because that's the next second big issue. Watershed management. The overall water household on this planet may be stable, but the extremes between floods on the one side and droughts on the other side will become bigger, and not just because of climate change. You know, 2% or 2.5% of all water on this planet is freshwater, of which half, I think, is frozen, and the other half, so less than 1%, is available for us, and of which 70% is used by agriculture. So you're turning a big lever there. If you manage your soils properly and you invest into the water-holding capacity of soils, then you can do with enormous amounts less water. So irrigation in Holland may be not so expensive, but in other parts of the world it's extremely expensive. So proper soil management, contributing to your organic matter contents, is crucially important, not only because of fertility and your ability to produce in future, but also because of water holding capacities. Thirdly, because of your contribution to biodiversity, which is where your vitality bank is. Diversity means vitality, and we see an immediate and direct connection between diversity, biodiversity, and the ability of a plant to deal with pests and diseases.
The fourth component
would be mitigation of climate change. Mm-hmm. Because 40% of all greenhouse gases are born by food and agriculture, of which half is caused by mineral fertilizer, nitrous oxide emissions, and the other half by methane. So before we talk about feeding the world, one thing is for sure, we can't afford to keep eating meat as long as, you know, the footprint of its animal feed production is so huge in terms of monoculture of soybeans and maize
that are
so big that you can't rotate them with any other crop for soil fertility reasons. So you have to apply shitloads of mineral fertilizer, which depletes soils, which creates a water footprint of 15,000 liters per kilo of beef, which is completely ridiculous, of which 98% is caused by irresponsible farming techniques, which produces 20% of global greenhouse gases. And then you have beef that actually produces methane, which is the other half of the 40% of food and agriculture emissions. So it's simply not sustainable. So why is it still simple? Well, it's simple because we have to look after our soils, water, biodiversity, and climate change. And what we need to embark on is, in order to mitigate risk of losses, also financial losses, we have to not only look at productivity per hectare, we have to look at climate smart, biodiversity smart, water smart, and particularly soil smart agriculture.
And these suppliers of you, they are on that journey. How close do you work with them? When a supplier says in South Africa, because they're making table grapes for you, and they say, we want to do more, Folkert, we want to do more, what's your response? You send in the troops? How close are you? Because this is not a normal supplier-trader relationship. This is a partnership that goes way further. Can you give an example on how that works?
Yeah.
Just to understand that this is another paradigm of doing business in the fruit and vegetable sector.
Well, it's actually a good example, that grape grower in South Africa. Maybe you deliberately chose it.
I think we've discussed it before.
All right. Well, this guy is a visionary guy who at some point discovered that he can produce bigger quantities, better quality, if he invests in soil fertility. And it cuts down his costs, but it also cuts down his irrigation bill and his pest and disease pressure. It does a lot of things that are not only good for people and planet, but also is for his for his income. And then we discovered, together with the World Bank, that the Sundays River Valley in South Africa is suffering from a huge problem, because the Sundays River stops producing water for some strange reason. So, which is a big issue, because 70% of all South Africa's citrus production is based in the Sundays River. So they
speaking about risks.
Yeah. So they were sort of on a suicide mission. Why? Because all this stuff, this alien vegetation that polluted these rivers, was caused by an enhanced fertile climate as a result of mineral fertilizer leakage into the groundwater produced by these citrus farmers. So you see where I'm getting.
Suicide, yeah.
So World Bank said, okay, we invent this project working for water, which means that we send in labor that's providing jobs, and they cut back all the alien vegetation from these rivers, that's water. So we provide the valley again with water. And that's where we moved in, teamed up with Sundays River Citrus Corporation, a huge co-op that controls, I think, 60 or 70% of the citrus production in the area. We teamed up with them and said, how about if we take that stuff that's cut out of the that green stuff that's cut out of the rivers, how about if we use that as a input for our compost, and we produce our own compost and compete with mineral fertilizer suppliers, which is what we did. So we started producing compost in huge numbers.
Because there was a lot of stuff in the river.
Because there was a lot of stuff in the river. Growers began to collectively cut down on their mineral fertilizer. So that stopped leakage. And in the meantime, they were building soils again and investing into organic matter contents in their soils. So there would be no leakage and there would be no problem with the rivers anymore. Plus, they would be more independent from external agrochemical input suppliers.
Which most farmers don't like to be anyway.
Farmers don't like to be anyway. So it's a very silly model.
And you started to... They became... Or they already were suppliers of you? Or you started to also...
No, then they... not all of them, but the majority of them converted to organic, which are still today our biggest citrus suppliers. So then we went to the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and applied for carbon credits, which we got on the delta of methane gas emission. Because in the past, all this green stuff was landfilled, producing methane. And now we started composting it, cutting down on the methane. And as a result, we got carbon credits on that delta. So we, all of a sudden, without knowing, produced three revenue streams. One was these growers could sell their compost to also neighboring farms, income revenue one. They could sell their carbon credits, revenue two. And they could sell their citrus to us, revenue three. So that model was then copied to municipalities in Cape Town, Durban, Port Elizabeth, and other bigger cities in South Africa, where we started collecting all the green waste, not from rivers, but just the green waste from the cities, started collecting it, cutting it down, making compost, and closing the carbon cycle by shipping that back to the farmers, which was a model that was then copied to Mexico, Argentina, Chile, India, China, etc. So it's a very sustainable model that does not only contribute to soil fertility, water holding capacity, and mitigation of climate change, but it most of all frees up growers from being held hostage by an agrochemical input business that parasites on farming like the pharmaceutical industry, parasites on your health. By selling a little bit of pills or agrochemicals with a few side effects, for which they have new pills or agrochemicals again. So this is a very sustainable model for the input, input suppliers, very sustainable, but not very sustainable for the planet or for the growers or for the consumers. So, and it's quite easy to break that. You just need to look at returns in a different way. Our friends call it, have a look at your natural capital returns or social capital or inspirational capital returns. Well, that's precisely what we do, except that we do not only look at the returns, we also monetize them. So we recently created a dashboard together with EY, KPMG, PwC, a few banks in a pilot called True Cost Accounting for Food, Farming and Finance, in which we actually measured and monetized the impact on soil, water, climate, livelihoods and health, provided these impacts with a monetary value, and produced our first profit and loss account based not just on financial capital but also on natural and social capital, which was a revolutionary step.
How did it look? I mean, normal profit and loss are usually pretty boring, but in this case, what are one or two highlights from that that really surprised you or really gave you a good feeling, or a bad one maybe?
Well, it was mixed. First of all, we noticed that we were correct in the assumption that organic is not too expensive, but conventional is too cheap, as long as we keep externalizing costs to future generations. Secondly, that was quite revolutionary. We noticed that organic apples are 19 cents healthier per kilo than conventional apples, which is something we haven't talked about yet. We talked about the impact on planet. We haven't addressed social impact or health impact yet. But this is an example that if you leave out pesticides, which is what organic farming does, then that actually also has a 19 cent per kilo impact on your health as a consumer, just as a consumer. And what we simply did is we took data from EFSA, from the European Food Safety Agency, and fed those data of pesticide and residue occasions. We fed that into the DALI, the Disability Adjusted Life Year calculation, which is a monetization tool used by the WHO. Of United Nations.
So this data was out there?
The data were out there, the template was out there, and we had the EY validating this calculation. That's how we achieved this 19 cent per kilo health advantage, by the way, defined in a very limited way, of course, because just absence of pesticides. Absence of disease. Health, as we all know, is much wider, much bigger, not just physical, it's also social, it's mental, it's, it's about vitality. But this in itself was already revolutionary itself. Thirdly, we got an overwhelming response from the financial sector thanking us for being the first, almost, together with other pioneers, to provide them with a dashboard so they would have indicators to not only look at people and planet impact from a qualitative point of view, but also from a monetized point of view.
What does it mean at the end? Because of course they love to have that number.
Yeah.
And if you have that number, even if it's a limited range, it means that probably the total range is a lot bigger, you just don't know the X. But you have already the 19 cents, or on the apple and the mango, etc., are different. But you can start calculating, which is in many cases what we miss. We don't know what an organic apple does to you, but we do know that what a chemical one does, so we can have that difference.
Finance is also about risk management. Probably
mostly.
Totally about risk management, isn't it? And risk mitigation.
A bad investment kills your return, and a good investment doesn't make it usually.
So you can be penny wise, pound foolish, and ignore those ecological and social or health risks. Or you can say, well, even if my short-term profit-driven shareholder doesn't realize yet, I have at least a governance responsibility to warn him for certain risks. And in the wake of the Paris Climate Agreement, it is likely that the authorities will have a look at the impact on climate of companies and sectors and public sector, etc. So if you want to establish a risk analysis on the possible effect of a carbon tax or whatever will be launched, then you better be prepared. And the central bank in Holland recently launched this stress test to see what the profitability of companies and sectors like the insurance sector or institutional investor sector would look like if they would have to compensate for their climate change damage.
And the data is in, or they're in the process?
I don't know, but just the fact that they...
Central Bank of the UK mentioned that the biggest threat to the economy or to us is climate change.
Yeah.
Shock, which made it to the front page of Financial Times, which is
right.
Good and bad at the same time. I mean, that shouldn't have been news, but it's...
No, but sustainability is definitely hitting the financial sector. And the you see symptoms. You don't see the real footprint yet and the consequences, but that's a matter of time. But if you want to look beyond the garden fence and not too far away, you can clearly see what will happen. And the fact that Standard & Poor's bought Trucost, I don't know if you followed that.
I didn't see that, but
there's UK-based Trucost accounting NGO or
how did they buy that?
Well, they decided if we want to establish a proper risk analysis of a company or a sector or a government or a country, then we better factor in risks of climate change and the risks of people and planet. And you see all these signs. Mm-hmm. You see the carbon tracker discussion around stranded assets.
Fascinating to see them. Yeah,
of the oil sector. So I think these are all sort of the first telltales of a next decade that will show us, that will confront us with a few disruptive changes that may have a multiplier effect, because one would say, well, okay, it's just about climate change. But my guess is that if people start talking about climate change, they will automatically also end up talking about the second largest carbon bank on the planet, which is soils after the oceans.
Plus,
is immediately related to climate change. So before you know, you talk about soil fertility, you talk about water, you talk about biodiversity.
Farmers' health.
Millions of consumers who are seriously concerned about the fact that 70% of their health bill is food related. So can we get more transparency with regards to the health impact of what we eat, please? You know, which is where our 19 cents come in per kilo. So I'm foreseeing bigger moments of disruptive change that will allow new pioneers and new startups and new businesses who capitalize on a positive impact on people and planet. That will attract new money. As a matter of fact, those who are stuck in the old 1.0 profit definition, they will be fucked, to put it mildly. And those who have factored
in... Who do you sell it to? I mean, it's called stranded assets for a reason, because you're going to be stranded you're not going to be able to sell it to anybody anymore.
Yeah.
So what's next for Eosta? I mean, this huge next 10 years, a lot of disruptive change, huge changes in how many businesses are run, many startups, like you mentioned, many newcomers coming into the space. What's for you in the medium long term? What do you see? What are you excited about in the next few years? If we talk in a year from now or in 2 years from now, what do you be excited about? If you can share them, obviously.
No, I would love to. Look, it's simple. Demand for organic produce is soaring, so is exponentially growing. But 15%, I don't think there's any IT sector that's growing so fast. Yet it is still small, particularly in this country, in Holland. But the average in the rest of Europe is, you know, and if you look in mainstream retail, it's anything between 20 and 40%. So it is already mainstream. So we are way behind when it comes to fulfilling that demand.
But you said 95% outside the Netherlands. I mean, yeah, you're located here, 98.
Yeah.
But let's say in the Netherlands, we need to catch up. There's a huge...
No, you know, as an entrepreneur, you don't care about your home country. At least I don't. I don't care about Holland, what happens here. No, it's more, you know, we are Europe-wide players, mm-hmm. and when it comes to markets, and we just see this enormously, exponentially growing demand, and we are seriously concerned about supply. So we need new suppliers. There's a huge investment potential for growers and investors
to scale up. Wow. Is that something you work with others with?
Sure.
With traditional banks, investors, etc.?
Yep.
So that's something you're... Probably, because at the end, you cannot do it all alone. I mean, you are a big company and a small company at the same time.
No, but we remain a traffic controller. We are not a bank. We're not a grower. We're supply chain managers. So we need to co-create with environmental agencies, with UN agencies, with financial actors, and with those who have a vision. So back to your question, where I see that would be the next challenge in the next few years. First of all, big demand for organic. And you need to be specific about what commodities, what crops, what products. Secondly, I see great potential in co-creating new models of return between the sustainability sector in food and agri and the financial sector. So if we could come up with a new dashboard to measure impact on people and planet and report on natural and social capital rather than just on financial capital only, if we would, and we have that tool, and we would team up with bigger retailers and other players, then that would giving a boost to sustainability, I'm sure. But that is an umbrella approach, a generic meta approach, which we will be pursuing. If you zoom in, we've so far always been looking at the environmental benefits when it comes to organic farming. We've also looked into the social benefits when it comes to fair trade certification. But we're increasingly beginning to look, and that's a campaign we will just be launching next January. We'll also be looking at the health impact of food. And we've called it Dr. Good Food. So we'll provide all our packages, millions of packages, with a little campaign logo that says Dr. Good Food. And drgoodfood.com will be a website where chefs, but also medical doctors, dietitians, and consumers and NGOs will team up to raise more awareness for the proactive healthcare of food. And we will have flash mobs at the fruit and veg departments of big retail customers, partners, flash mobs with students in white doctor coats and stethoscopes handing out fruit and veg and little flyers to point out what the connection is between health and food, because that's the next big challenge, and I smell momentum there.
Yeah.
And it will contribute to our unique selling point in the market. So in the past, we've been promoting the bees, with our Save Our Soils campaign, we've been promoting soils.
Well, there's a direct connection, soil, food, health.
Absolutely. But consumers consumers like single issue. Everything is connected in nature. That's the nice thing.
On the planet, yeah.
And
You need to be specific.
You need to be specific.
Half a second to make a difference in attention to
precisely
when somebody decides left or right. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I see momentum there. And then, we'll take it from there.
Lots to do. Thank you so much, Volkert, for your time. We'll be checking in on all of these projects, and thank you for taking the time to share.
Thank you, Koen. Pleasure.
You just listened to a conversation with Volkert Engelsman, co-founder of Aosta, where we discussed the role of an air traffic controller in the organic food supply web, and what's next for this 30-year-old organic company. Thank you for making the time to listen to this podcast and making it all the way till the end. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you found the Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food podcast valuable, there are a few simple ways you can use to support it. Number one, rate and review the podcast on your podcast app. That's the best way for other listeners to find the podcast, and it only takes a few seconds. Number two, share this podcast on social media or email it to your friends and colleagues. Number three, if this podcast has been of value to you and if you have the means, please join my Patreon community to help grow this platform and allow me to take it further. You can find all the details on patreon.com/regenerativeagriculture or in the description below. Thank you so much and see you at the next podcast.